Thank you, Matt. Yes, I am presenting on behalf of Tiffany Mulder, who is a public health prevention service specialist with us in New York City at the health department when she did this work. And very unfortunately, she couldn't attend. So I hope maybe what I have to say this morning will fill in some tiny gap in trying to understand why patients who are offered EPT do not accept it. So I think we've heard a lot of the background, and I'll skip down to the second bullet, really, which is that on the strength of the evidence that is accrued through several randomized trials and some observational studies, numerous public health programs across the country have now sought policy and legislative change to permit the practice of EPT. In New York State, EPT is legal for chlamydia only. The regulations, there was a law that we passed, and then that law stipulated that there needed to be regulations to accompany it. Those regulations were finally adopted in October of 2010. And in March of 2011, we implemented EPT in the nine-clinic network of City Health Department-run STD clinics in New York City. Just generally speaking, the impact of EPT is going to be dependent on several factors, and actually I think this was really highlighted by Matt's presentation as well. And it's going to be a function of, in our case, the chlamydial disease burden, the extent to which providers take up the practice of EPT, whether or not patients who are offered EPT accept it, and then what mix of other partner services and clinical services are available in the areas where this is all happening. And it's a sort of complex picture. There are a few data to describe. I'm going to focus on that issue of patient acceptance. And there are a few data to describe rates of patient acceptance of EPT and the factors that may influence acceptance. One report from the Denver STD Clinic reported that EPT was accepted by only 28% of eligible patients who were offered EPT. In that report, female sex, younger age, white non-Hispanic race ethnicity, and chlamydia, as opposed to gonorrhea, were all associated with EPT acceptance. The objective of our analysis was to measure EPT acceptance rates among patients attending New York City STD clinics, so a specific setting, and to describe patient, provider, and implementation-specific factors associated with acceptance. The population that we looked at was EPT-eligible persons who were offered EPT at the New York City STD clinics. And in our city clinics, the way we implemented EPT, eligibility was defined as heterosexual, lab-confirmed chlamydial infection, no concurrent GC or syphilis infection, and the patient was only offered EPT at the time of their own treatment. And you can imagine that given very high presumptive treatment rates that you see in many STD clinic settings, this meant that only a subset of chlamydia-infected patients were actually being offered EPT because many were being treated on the day of visit and therefore without lab confirmation and therefore would not have been eligible for EPT. The way we dispense EPT in our STD clinics is also in a form of partner pack, modeled on mats. And we include in it azithromycin, 1 gram, either the actual medication in a vial or a prescription if that's what the patient prefers. There's a brochure for the patient describing EPT and explaining how it works, a brochure for the partner with the same condoms, and a little card with a list of all the clinics and the addresses for all 9 of our STD clinics where they can direct partners for free care. We give medication for up to 3 sex partners to an index case, so we'll give out up to 3 partner packs with medication in them. Beyond that, we'll give partner packs with prescriptions in them. For patients under the age of 18, we only give out partner packs that include actual medication, and they can get up to 3. Our data source was electronic medical record data for patient visits to our STD clinics with documentation that EPT had been offered between March 2011 and January 2012, a 10-month period. When we implemented EPT, we modified our electronic medical record to include a so-called EPT module that pops up when a clinician selects a diagnosis, any diagnosis with chlamydia. And all parts of that module are must-fill. This is sort of shows you what that EPT module includes. The question is the patient EPT eligible? Yes, no. Was EPT offered? Yes, no. Was EPT accepted? Yes, no. Then for those patients who decline EPT, another question appears with a drop-down of possible answers. If the patient refused EPT, what is the main reason for refusal? And that includes no longer with partner, uncomfortable discussing STDs with partner, concerned about intimate partner violence, prefers medicine to be delivered by a clinician, partner has already been treated, I don't think my partner would take it, and partner is in clinic today for treatment, and an other category. The partner is in clinic today for treatment response was only added in June of this 10-month period, so 3 months into the study period here. So in the early days, some of those answers would have been lumped as other. We did a univariate analysis to describe persons who were offered EPT and the proportion accepting and reasons why they declined EPT. Then a bivariate analysis to look at factors that may have been associated with EPT acceptance, and those were grouped as patient-level factors, provider-level factors, and implementation phase-specific factors. And our bivariate analyses were stratified by sex. We thought a priori that it was likely there would be differences by sex. These are the patient-level factors that we examined: age, sex, race, ethnicity, history of chlamydial infection, symptoms at visit, and the history of chlamydial infection was a self-report. Symptoms at visit when the EPT was offered, the date of last sex, which we examined as time since last sex, number of sex partners in a 3-month referent period, and condom use with vaginal sex, always, sometimes, never. Provider factors were provider sex, individual provider, we looked at each provider's EPT acceptance rate, patient volume, and implementation factors included time since EPT implementation. This just shows the age and sex distribution of patients who were offered EPT. And this is not the focus of my presentation, but I just wanted to show you that, not surprisingly, most patients who are offered EPT are in the teen and young adult age group, which is where the chlamydial infection would be found. The race-ethnicity distribution of patients offered EPT, again, consistent with the epidemiology of chlamydia. There's a greater number of black non-Hispanic persons diagnosed with chlamydia and being offered EPT. So the first finding results, findings related to acceptance is that overall 56% of the patients who were offered EPT accepted it. And that was completely the same by sex, 55% of males and 56% of females. There was no significant association with patient acceptance by patient sex, patient age, patient race ethnicity, the number of sex partners, condom use with vaginal sex, and no significant association with provider sex either. This shows the main reason why people refused EPT, and I know the font's a little small, but there was no difference by sex for any of those main reasons, except one, which I've indicated, but the most common reason was that they were no longer with a partner. The second most common reason, at 22%, was that the partner was already treated. The third most common reason was that the partner was in clinic that day for treatment, and that did differ by sex, where 13% of males offered that reason and 23% of females. And the fourth most common reason was, at 16%, prefers medicine be given by clinician. These show the bivariate associations with EPT acceptance for those variables that we did find significant. Past chlamydial infection was significantly associated with among males, where males with a past chlamydial infection were more likely to accept EPT. males who had had a previous visit to one of our STD clinics, and females as well, were more likely to accept EPT. And males who were symptomatic at the EPT visit were also more likely to accept EPT. Did not matter for females. When we looked at time since last sex, there was a sort of nice dose response curve where those with a longer time since last sex were less likely to accept EPT, and that was true for both males and females. Provider and implementation factors, there was a very wide range in EPT acceptance rates by provider, from 42 to 100%, with a median of 57%, which was right on our average acceptance rate. And it appeared to vary by patient volume, so those providers who had offered EPT to less than 25 patients had a much higher patient acceptance rate, and those who had offered it to more than 50 had a lower patient acceptance rate. This shows patient acceptance rate over time from the first 3 months following implementation to the last of a year following implementation, and there was a decline, statistically significant decline. So the limitations of our study there's several. One is there was a lack of clarity early on of how to document in our electronic medical record whether a patient was eligible and offered EPT. The issue was really around eligibility. And many providers, but we know that some providers early on, if they thought a patient had their partner already treated, they didn't even consider the patient eligible because they didn't think that that patient was in need of partner treatment, so they indicated that patient was not eligible for EPT, even though on the grounds of eligibility criteria they would have been, and therefore they didn't offer it. In fact, it wasn't filled out, it had to have been filled out. If they said that the patient was ineligible, then they would say offered no. And that would have led to only those patients who were perhaps more likely to accept EPT being offered EPT, so it may have increased our early acceptance rates. The other reason I mentioned we didn't have the response category early on for patient with partner in clinic today, so that may be underestimated. So in conclusion, EPT is acceptable to New York City STD clinic population. And those who've had a previous experience with our clinics, either a clinic visit or a diagnosis of chlamydia among men, appear to be more open to accepting EPT. The majority who declined EPT did so because they already had a treated partner. That totaled 42% if you look at the partner already treated and the in clinic with partner today categories, which points to the potential value of a bring your own partner or BYOP strategy, if that could be exploited. The lower EPT acceptance rates with increased time since sex correlate with that notion that partner treatment is contributing to this. There were very rarely reported concerns of intimate partner violence or a belief that a partner would not take EPT as reasons for declining EPT. And our provider level variables suggest that the MD's attitudes towards EPT or the time they have with a patient may influence patient acceptance. The decline in EPT we saw with time may be an artifact of the documentation that I described, or it may be real. So the implications for program are that EPT for chlamydia is acceptable to patients, and that encouraging patients to bring their own partners may enhance partner treatment rates. That provider investment in this partner management strategy may be variable and may wane with time, and that efforts to refresh it may be useful. Thank you, and I want to thank my co-authors as well. Thank you very much. Any questions?
I have a question. My name is Cheryl. I'm from Gila River Indian Community in Arizona. We give a lot of EPT, and I'm finding that when they come back in 3 months later for a test of cure, that sometimes they'll still be positive. Have you guys done any studies with these patients to see if 3 months later they're still positive or not?
We haven't yet looked at reinfection rates, and we certainly can. One of my concerns about looking at reinfection rates is I don't see it as a way to evaluate EPT per se, because I think that the people who get EPT are not a random selection of patients. But I think if one were to compare like groups, that could be very useful. And I imagine we'll find that, that many are. I mean, it's definitely not a panacea. Yes?
Hi, Jessica Ladd. I'm a student at Johns Hopkins. And I was wondering, for those index patients that had more than one partner, does acceptance of EPT mean acceptance of EPT for one partner, for all partners, or what does that mean? And then for those who similarly refuse and state reason for refusal, if they say partner already treated, does that mean all of their partners? What?
Yeah, no, thank you. Very good questions. And this is a very busy and clinic setting. And these answers are just as they appear. We did not ask partner-specific questions. So there's some misclassification in these response categories. That said, the vast majority of the patients reported only one partner. So most of the time this is for only one partner, and we certainly could do further analyses where we limit it to those patients who said that they had one partner and then look at the same outcomes. In the first year that we have had EPT in place, we just passed the one-year mark in our clinics, and we've managed about 975 patients with EPT, and those 975 patients had, I think, 1,200 partners all told, or we gave out 1,200 doses, I should say. But most have one. Time for one more.
Bolin, Los Angeles. So this is a question about clinic flow and provider acceptance within the EMR. I noticed that, you know, there's must fill boxes and you know, menus that pop up, and you got to click a lot of things. And I wonder whether providers that had higher patient volume, whether they got click fatigue or whether they complained about click fatigue, and how quickly the screens changed and refreshed. Because, you know, when you ask providers to do something about data collection or, you know, any kind of documentation, the first thing that they want to know is how many clicks is it going to take me to, you know, get through this visit and get on to my next patient.
Well, we haven't gotten feedback that they had click fatigue. And again, this ends up being, as it turns out, this was sort of the subject of a poster earlier in the conference, but only about 30% of our lab-confirmed chlamydia end up being eligible for EPT because our presumptive treatment rates are so high. It's about 50% of women, but only 15% of male chlamydia cases. So this is only a subset of all the clicking they're doing. So we haven't had complaints about it. Thank you.
Thank you.